easier, but I mean, I'm glad I chose what he's doing.
Okay, so the plan for this afternoon is going to be that we'll meet here at 1:30 and you guys can take the exam. And as I mentioned on Tuesday, after that, you're on your own. You can stick around and work on that, the next homework assignment, the soil classification exercise. You can go down to the lab, work down there with your samples if you have them. Looking at, it's a good day to look at soil colors outside in the sunlight. And you can do that, work on textures, whatever you think would be most helpful for you at this point. Or you can go home and go to bed, or go out to one of the bars, whatever you would like to do. It's completely open. And then next week, we plan on going out, even though I think in the syllabus it says something about giving reports on your projects. I think we'll just have a use it to go out in the field, because there are a couple more things I'd like to show you guys before we call it a semester. So any questions about that? Is everybody ready for the test?
Not so much.
Any questions?
Yeah. Leanne, but can you pull up the test?
Okay, let's see. Okay.
Go for it, Hannah. We got books for them.
Yeah.
This profile, the dominant seven mineral, can be kaolinite and hematite or just kaolinite?
Either one would work.
Okay.
Kaolinite, hematite, either of those is fine. So this is the, what would the soil order of this one be?
First
number one. Yeah, it's an oxisol. Those red colors are definitely due to hematite, so that's a good guess, but kaolinite is a likely possibility too. Yes,
Anna. Because they have clays, but they're just really low active clays. Is that the?
Oh, it's predominantly kaolinite.
Predominantly kaolinite.
Yeah.
Hematite.
Yeah.
But they're just like, with hand texture and things like that, they're
They'll feel like clays, but usually kaolinite is not as sticky, and maybe not as plastic as some of the 2-to-1 clays that are going to be more like what you felt in the samples you've been hand texturing all semester.
So, what do you want for diagnostic features?
Diagnostic features in this soil profile.
Oxic horizon.
Okay, probably an oxic horizon is a good one. What else?
Low CEC.
Well, that's not really a diagnostic. The oxic is the diagnostic horizon. Okirk epipeton, certainly not mollic. So those would be two good ones. Those are the best two I can think of.
The test on number two, I think.
Let me see here. What? Okay, question number two. Okay, so which soil order is represented by these three soils? Which ones in UST suborder, UTE suborder, poorly drained, base saturation? Okay. So here are the profiles. So which one of these would be, can't remember the order, but they're all mollisols. Okay, which one would be a eutic moisture regime? Which one would be a ustic moisture regime? Okay, A would be eutic, C would be, and why would that be? Yeah, you got calcium carbonate in C, and we said that's something you don't find in eutic moisture regimes as a good rule of thumb. And the profile A, you don't see anything that looks like secondary carbonates. So all other factors being relatively the same, that would be better representation of a more humid climate or greater leaching regime, like in a eutic moisture regime. And then see, what was the other one? Oh yeah, which one would have the poorest drainage? B, and that's one of these owl balls. You remember we talked about those, that they're pretty close in most cases to being aquals, fairly similar, but they tend to be very wet. And that's one of the issues with their use and management. And what was there another part of that?
Base saturation of C.
Oh, base saturation, where the red arrow is down here in C, what would it be? How about 100%? Because you've got free calcium carbonate there, and that's going to dominate the exchange complex in the soil. So 100% base saturation.
Is this a concept that you can generalize? Wherever you find the free calcium carbonate, you will...
Yeah, because it's going to have such an overriding effect on calcium concentrations. You're not going to find... And normally, if you look at the... a soil horizon has free calcium carbonate, the pH is maintained at about 8.2, somewhere in there. And so very calcium-rich basic environment. Anything else? That's it?
What's the dominant soil forming process?
What would be the dominant, what do all these guys share? What characteristic? Well, they all have homolog epipedon, right? So what would be the dominant soil forming process?
Melanization.
Yeah, melanization, or the darkening of the soil as a result, in this case, of the root inputs and the decomposition.
Can we go to the back page of the text?
The back page? This one?
Yes.
Okay.
The Xerox one, I forgot why you said that wasn't, because I...
Oh, question number 6.
Yeah.
Other than potential copyright issues, why is there not a Xerox suborder of oxisols?
Because they don't have cold winters.
Yeah, the idea of a xeric regime is that it's from temperate regions, in that you have a distinct summer and winter period and a difference in temperature. And we said typically the xeric regime is cool, moist winters and warm, dry summers. And when you look at the oxisols, the vast majority of those are going to be in isotemperature regimes, isothermic, isohyperthermic.
I asked because on the Tetra Petra, on the supplemental, actually on one of their signs, they advertise as Xerox.
Say that again.
Oh, on
Tetra Preta.
On Terra, yeah, that Tetra Preta.
Yeah.
They advertise.
Well, they sell soil, and they also do Xerox copies there.
Oh.
I think. Oh, okay, I got it. Yeah, it's one of those one-stop shopping places.
Yeah,
so you can get Xerox copies. You can buy Terra Preta, but I don't think they're billing these at the Terra Preta as from a Xerox. I hadn't noticed that before. That's funny.
That
was
right here on Xerox, right down there.
Let's see.
Yeah, you can do it.
Oh yeah. I hadn't thought about that before, but yeah, I guess it's technically not correct to call all photocopies Xeroxes, but we kind of use it that way. It's a generic term for photocopies. And yeah, anything else?
Number 8.
Okay, agree or disagree with the following statement, justify your answer. Udols are more productive soils than udults.
You can go either way.
Agreed.
Okay, so someone agrees. You say you can go either way. Well, okay. Brian, justify your answer then, if you agree.
So Udol is a mulch which has high organic matter content and is associated, high organic matter content is associated with high nutrient content, whereas a Udol is an old saw which is highly weathered, nutrient poor soil.
Okay, and I don't disagree with anything you've said, but why does a mollisol have a lot of organic matter and a high nutrient content? Was it just born that way?
Just or slow decomposition? There's not enough moisture to decompose all the organic matter?
Well, that in some cases that's true, but I guess what I would point out is that if you look at a soil that has a mollic epipedon, the reason that it's developed that mollic epipedon is not because it's a fertile soil, it's because it is a productive site. And that mollic epipedon really represents the fossil record of the past production on that site. And in the case of grasslands, that would be below ground root production. And those roots die back. And so, yeah, it turns into what we think of as a fertile soil, but it was a productive site to begin with. So there is a little bit of a distinction there. And I guess, Mateo, you said you could go either way. So what's your justification?
If you have possibility to add lime and fertilizer, the yield odds gives the same yield of
Okay, so lime and fertilizers, Udol's can provide similar yields. I showed you an example of that from Iowa and North Carolina, Georgia, somewhere down in there. Now, if it said Udol's are more fertile soils than Udol's, I would say definitely you'd have to agree with that. But productivity is in part a result of management. And one of the things about ultisols is they generally have very favorable climatic regimes. A lot of them are in fairly humid, eutic moisture regimes. They're not found in cold areas. Whereas some mollisols may be, I guess we're talking specifically about Udols, but I guess this doesn't have a single answer, but definitely you need to distinguish between productivity and fertility, okay? And in fact, both can be very productive soils. The caveat is ultisols need the inputs. And if you think about it, if you're going to practice sustainable agriculture, you need to provide the inputs anyway, rather than mine nutrients out of the soil, right? Anything else?
Yeah. Question about that, and with the ultisols, they have a higher base saturation, but isn't it measured lower down in the soil? Or no, they have lower.
Yeah, the ultisols have a lower base saturation.
And the alfasols have a higher.
Yes. Yeah, alfasols have the higher base saturation. Ultisols are lower.
Can you go to the bottom of the first page?
I can. Bottom of the first page.
Yeah.
There.
So
okay.
Number four. What would be the three diagnostic horizons or features?
Let's see. This soil is found in the southeastern United States, contains a BT horizon, has percent base saturation ranging from 9 to 25. BT horizon contains about 70% clay, dominated by kaolinite. If you just didn't even see a picture, what would you, you ought to be able to answer a couple things there. What would the order be? Okay, ultisol would be the order. Suborder, probably want to take a look at the profile there. But even without doing that, what about diagnostic horizons or features in an ultisol?
Doesn't it go follow that AEBT sequence? Can it?
Those aren't diagnostic horizons. Those are horizon designations. Okay, but what would if diagnostic horizons are related to what soil taxonomy uses to classify these things?
So you have argillic probably.
Okay, so you've got an argillic or a candic horizon.
Kaolinitic.
What's that?
Kaolinitic.
Well, that's a family level term, but just in terms of diagnostic horizons and features, let's say candic or argillic. It's got to have an epipedon, right? probably. It's probably not going to be malic or any of those. Look at the profile here. Number four. So there you go. So malic epipeton? No. Pretty light colored. So if I'm looking at diagnostic horizons and features, I'd say it's got an ochric epipeton. It looks like it's got a bit of an E horizon in there. If you said albic, that's probably okay. Argillic, candic. How about the stuff down at the bottom? The profile, the mottled red, gray, and yellow.
Plinthite
would be a diagnostic feature. And so back to the, I think, suborder. Well-drained or poorly drained soil? Yeah, probably well-drained. So what would the suborder be for an ultisol in the southeastern United States? A udult would be the best answer. Anything else?
Question three, then.
Question three, and see the picture here. Okay. Number three, landscape, soil, central Idaho, form under Idaho fescue, sagebrush, community, cryic temperature regime. Soil has a subsurface zone of clay accumulation. Which classification is most appropriate? Okay, so you got some choices there. Andy Zerol, RG Ustal, RG Albal, RG Cryol, Umbri Udall. So central Idaho, with the information there, which of those is going to be the best?
RG
Cryol. Yeah, how about RG Cryol? Because you're told it's got a cryic temperature regime and a subsurface zone of clay accumulation. So that's probably the best. I think the others you can rule out here. There's no such thing as an Andy Zerol, but RG Ustal. Where do we find the ustic moisture regimes typically? Well, Great Plains, kind of in the drier part of the Great Plains. RG Albal, you know, you'd expect to see a nice albic horizon in that. And if you look at the picture in this thing, see anything that looks like an albic horizon? Not so much. But the other questions, couple diagnostic horizons and features. Okay, malic epipeton's good. Calcic horizon. You already were told it had a zone of clay accumulation, right? So maybe argillic horizon. Those probably are the best choices. And then I think it said that this is a PACIC. RG Cryol, or the PACIC subgroup level. What's that referred to? Do you remember?
Is it referred to like the thicker than 40 centimeters?
Yes, for a really thick malic epipeton. And you can see, at least over here, this is probably the malic color is going down to 60 or 70 centimeters. So PACIC means thick.
Always refer to
mullet? I checked on, somebody asked me this earlier, and I don't believe you will find it in any other soil orders other than mollisol.
Number nine.
Let's see what that is. Describe three soil and or site features that could be used to indicate you're in a landscape dominated by vertisols. Okay, what would you look for?
Cracks.
How about cracks at the surface? Mm-hmm. Be one good possibility. And fairly wide cracks. What else?
Gilgai
or something. Gilgai relief, and that's that mounding that you see either on a slope or in a on a flat area, it's more of that circular depression, and then high areas in between. What else?
Telephone
slick
poles.
Insides. Yeah, and if you were looking at the at the soil per se. You'd have slick insides in there.
C-O-L-E?
Yeah, that may be a hard thing to assess if you're out on in the field, but somebody I think might have said something about doing a high clay content, and that probably is okay. What else might you see?
Wedge shape aggregates.
Wedge, good one. Wedge shape aggregates. You might look for cracked foundations or tilting poles and posts, like fence posts, things like that, that just indicate the shrink swell activity. So there are a whole bunch of things you could put for that. Well, I think we've probably done all these questions now, so. Anything else? Going once. Twice. Three times. Okay. Well, if you come up with something else between now and 1:30, come by and stop by and see me, and we can go over it. So what we're going to do today is we're getting to the very end of the soil orders, and in fact we're down to the last two. And one of the things that happens when you get down to the final categories in any type of a key, and especially in the key to the soil taxonomy, you end up with soils that have not come out as a result of lack of certain characteristics. In other words, you got soils that don't have permafrost, that don't have a variety of horizons or high shrink swell, all this stuff. So you're starting to end up with soils that really don't have a lot of distinguishing features. And if you look at this official description of, or part of the keys for inceptisols, it says up here, other soils that have either, and then it's one or more of the following. And you notice item A there, a cambic horizon with its upper boundary within 100 centimeters. I highlighted cambic horizon because that is really the central concept of an inceptisol. And that is a soil that has some but pretty minimal subsoil development. And if you think about the word inceptisol, inception, so these are fairly young soils, and at least in terms of their development and what you see as far as horizonation. Now, the other thing that's kind of confusing, if you look at this, you see terms like calcic, petrocalcic, gypsic, spodic, sombric, oxic, sulfuric, some of these other types of diagnostic horizons. But remember, for whatever reason, anything that gets classified as an inceptisol did not come out previously in the one of the other orders. So it may have a spodic horizon, but there's something about it that does not qualify it as a spodosol. So these are more of the odd cases, and I guess I wouldn't focus on those as much as that first item up there with the cambic horizon, because at least the examples that I'm going to show you here, that's the one feature they all share, is this cambic horizon or BW. If we look at the simple key here, we get down here and it says, inceptisols are soils with weakly developed subsurface horizons. And once again, the main idea there would be that of a cambic horizon or what we would typically think of as a BW horizon. You might keep in the back of your mind, there are other possibilities, but much less common. And there's something about them, like they're really deep down, or they've been buried, or something that prevents it from being in those other soil orders. So if we go to the main page here, you get the derivation there of inceptisols, the Latin root inceptum, which means beginning. So you can kind of think of inceptisols as the beginning soils, fairly young. And the note here that they exhibit minimal horizon development, more developed than entisols, which is going to be the last category, or the last soil order that comes out in the keys, but they lack the features that are characteristic of the other soil orders. And a little bit about the distribution. It, the second paragraph there, it says that the first note that inceptisols are not found in aridic moisture regimes. That's the probably the one place that you won't find them. You can find them just about everywhere else, so they're very widely distributed, and you'll find them in a whole variety of ecological settings. The in terms of where you'd find them on a landscape, a lot of inceptisols are found in mountainous areas where you've got fairly steep slopes. You can also find them on really young geomorphic surfaces. So these would be landscapes that are young. The resistant parent materials. So you might have a combination of factors that include a resistant parent material that's not going to weather very quickly, and that can help promote the formation of inceptisols. The land use is, again, it's pretty variable because of the wide range of settings where you find these soils. But we'll note here, it says a sizable percentage of inceptisols are found in mountainous areas, and those are typically used for forestry, recreation, watershed, those types of things, wildlife. And inceptisols occupy about 15% of the global ice-free land area. And the note here, only entisols are more extensive. So the inceptisols would be the second most extensive soil order. And you see the distribution here in that pinkish purple color. And you'll notice they're kind of all over the place. You'd be pretty hard pressed to come up with a set of environmental conditions where these are limited. You'll notice that they're on all continents. I don't know about Antarctica. I'm not sure that inceptisols are found down there, but certainly everywhere else. And if you look at the United States, I think this really gives you an idea of how widely scattered inceptisols are. You can see they're pretty much found in all 50 states, some more than others. The areas that really show up here with the darker brown colors would be some of the Appalachian Mountains there. And then you get in the western United States, you can see areas of them that more often than not tend to be some of the higher elevation forested areas. But, you know, they're all over the place. The only exclusion is you don't find them in aridic soil moisture regimes. And in the U.S., they're representing about 10% of the land area or so. So the inceptisols taxonomically get split into seven orders, and you can see them here listed. First of all, as we've seen several with the other orders, the aquips come out first, so these are the wet ones. And then this is an interesting one, anthreps. Sounds like a disease, but it's actually a suborder of inceptisols that have evidence of human habitation and farming. So these are soils that have been impacted one way or another by human activity. Geleps would be the soils that the inceptisols that come from really cold climates, or they have a mean annual soil temperature less than zero. The cryeps, these would be the inceptisols of cryic temperature regimes, so mean annual soil temperature between 0 and 8 degrees C, and also cold summers. Then you've got the usteps, and those would be the inceptisols that have an ustic moisture regime, or what we might think of as semi-arid or subhuman. Xereps, those are the inceptisols with the xeric moisture regime, and then finally, the UDEPs, which are the inceptisols of the aeutic moisture regime. The way these things get arrayed out, you can kind of see it very similar to what we saw with a couple of the other orders. You can kind of do it from wet to dry and then cold in the other corner. So geleps, cryeps in the cold area, and then the dry end, we've got xereps and usteps and UDEPs and aquips as you go to the wetter regimes. And the anthreps are just kind of stuck there in the middle because they don't really fit as far as having a place in a climatic gradient. If you look at this map of the U.S., it's got the suborders on it. You'll note that in the eastern U.S., The two suborders that show up are the UDEPs in green, and then the blue color are the AQUEPs. And we saw this with the alpha sols, and it's kind of a similar pattern. The AQUEPs, of course, the wet ones, they're in coastal areas. Usually, it's not uncommon to find them in close proximity to river systems, lower-lying areas on a landscape. And then the green, the UDEPs, would be the better-drained ones that are found. You can see here that the Appalachian Mountains have a lot of the UDEPs, and in upstate parts of New York and New England as well. Now, as you move west, things get dry, we don't have too many UDEPs, but this orange color would be the USDEPs, and that's what you see there in Texas, Oklahoma, eastern Montana, parts of the Southwest. And then the purple color here, CRYEPs, so those would be some of the higher elevation soils in the Rocky Mountains. And then you get out in the California, parts of Idaho, Washington, and Oregon, the yellow color would be the XEREPs. And then it really doesn't show up very well on here, but this red color are the ANTHREPs, and it's pretty much indistinguishable from this orange color for the USDEPs. And probably the only areas that you're going to see the ANTHREPs would be maybe some of the urban areas or larger areas that are old occupation sites. And it's pretty difficult to see them on a map of this scale.
So what happens if it's influenced by humans, but it's really like a UDEP?
Well, it's going to be, there are a couple possibilities, but if it's influenced by humans, you see it's going to fall out in the ANTHREP suborder. And this is a relatively new addition, so I'm not sure that all these soils have found their true home yet. But for right now, they would get put into the ANTHREP suborder. Few examples here, and I don't have a lot, but here's one from the eastern United States. This would be an example of a UDEP. This is in the mountain, part of the Appalachian chain. This would be in North Carolina. And you can see the types of forest there. A lot of steep slopes, higher elevations. And if you notice let's just go to the next one here. This is an example of what would be classified as a typic distrudept. So it's an inceptisol with the eutic moisture regime. And how about this root, D-Y-S-T-R, distra? We have seen a very similar root before. Do you remember what it refers to? Well, it's kind of the opposite of utra, which in this case refers specifically to base saturation in the soil. And this distra means low base saturation, and for these inceptisols, this would mean less than 60% base saturation. And we'll see the counterpart here in the next example. So it's an inceptisol with low base saturation, typical variety. This one's in West Virginia, but if you read the description, it says the soils formed in colluvium derived from acid sandstone. So here's an example of the parent material probably having a lot to do with the classification, and more specifically the low base status, just because of the weakly consolidated acidic parent material, not a lot of bases in it to begin with. As a result, base saturation pH relatively low. So if you look at the horizonation here, there's probably an O horizon up on top. It's not indicated, but a fairly thin A horizon there, AB, and then you'll note right in here the higher chromas, BW horizon. So no clay accumulation, or if there is, it's very little, and then that grades into a fairly gravelly or cobbly BC horizon, and then a C horizon down there. So this is kind of the idea of not a lot of development, but some subsurface development. So in terms of diagnostic horizons, I think here you'd be limited to having an ochric epipedon and a cambic horizon, and that's pretty much it. Now, this next example is kind of the counterpart, and this one is classified as a lithic utridept. And you notice, still a eutic and septosol, but here's the other root, utro, and in this case it means high base saturation, high base status. And we've seen this term lithic come up at the subgroup level, and that refers to what? Presence of bedrock, okay? And this soil, let me make this a little bit bigger. This down here, this grayish looking stuff, is limestone bedrock. And so you've got a fairly shallow soil profile, and there's an A horizon in here. It doesn't show up real well. A little higher chroma here, which is the BW, and then this is would be designated as an R, the limestone bedrock. But here's another example of the parent material sort of playing a role here. And you've got high base status, and the reason is you've got a limestone parent material. So it's rich in calcium and probably magnesium, and therefore you end up with the higher base saturation. So one of the things with inceptisols, it's a major point or a major feature used to distinguish them is whether they've got high base saturation or low base saturation. That's probably a pretty useful separation in terms of the, if you think about their suitability for plant growth and even agricultural purposes. This one, maybe not so good for agriculture, even though it's got high base status because of the shallow nature. Be careful dragging any sort of an implement through this thing because you're gonna hit rock at some point. But that this idea of parent material and high base status and low base status is pretty important. Just a note on here, the irregular boundary between the BW horizon and the bedrock and fertile soils, but too shallow for cultivation. The diagnostic horizons in this thing would be, you've got an ochric epipedon, you've got a cambic horizon, and this one's got a lithic contact or that presence of hard bedrock pretty close to the surface. A couple of examples here at home. Here's central Idaho. You've seen this type of a landscape, pretty steep slopes, and fairly high, in some cases fairly high elevations. And this one is classified as a distrocrypt landscape. This is Limhi County. And the suborder crypts, so we're getting high enough that you get the cryic temperature regime, so pretty low mean annual soil temperature and fairly cool summers. And then here's distro again, and let's go to the soil profile. You can see the whole classification. Loamy skeletal mixed active xeric distrocrypt. So this one is going to be a low base status variety. And you can read about the parent material here. It's formed in colluvium that is derived from quartzite. What are the dominant elements in quartzite? Silicon. And in terms of plant nutrition, pretty limited. So as a result, you end up with a low pH soil, low base saturation. The other note here, the steep slopes, cool climate combine to slow soil development. So the diagnostic horizons, once again, ochric epipedon and a cambic horizon. You note up here in the family, it says loamy skeletal. Remember the term skeletal? Refers to having more than 35% rock fragments in the control, what's called the control section. And here that would be from 25 centimeters, so there down to 1 meter, right in there. And you can see there are a lot of rock fragments in there. So that skeletal is a good way of indicating that, because in this case that's a pretty overriding characteristic, because these rock fragments don't hold water, roots can't penetrate them, so it really restricts the rooting volume for the soil and also the water holding capacity. Okay, the last one, this is down near McCall, and you'll notice the landscape here, the big boulders sitting out, and there's actually no rock outcrops around there to be seen. This is an example of what are called glacial erratics, And these are big boulders that are transported by ice, and then they're just left behind after the ice melts, and they kind of sit out by themselves, and people probably look at them and go, wonder where this came from. And they're actually fairly large. I don't know if you can tell, but you can see a shrub here for scale, so certainly not something you would easily move to get it out of the way. And the soil profile is this guy, which you've seen before. This is a soil series known as the McCall series. A lot of McCall, if you ever see a road cut down there, that's probably what it looks like. Lots of rock fragments in there, everything from, we talked about glacial till as a parent material, and we said that it's very poorly sorted. It's got a whole mix of particle sizes, everything from clay size material up to boulders. And this one, loamy skeletal mix, superactive, typic humi cryept. Now the term humi, any guesses on what that refers to? Yeah, it's got a fairly high amount of organic matter in it. And in fact, this one, not instead of an ochric epipedon, this one actually has an umbric epipedon. And you remember the criteria for umbric? It's exactly like a malic epipedon, but it has low beta saturation, less than 50%. So this one, maybe a little different, umbric epipedon, cambic horizon, but again, a fairly young soil, because this was left after the last glaciation, so you're talking about something 10 to 15,000 years old, pretty cold climate, so not real conducive to much soil formation. Land use notes, large percentage of rock fragments, low water holding capacity, not too much agricultural or forestry potential in these things. Okay, that's the inceptisols. I got two other images to show you, and these are out of your book, and I just put them in here to kind of give you an idea of how inceptisols might be associated with other soil orders on the landscape. This one right here, the first one, is figure 18.1 in your book, and I showed you this before when we were talking about ultisols. And this would be the Carolinas, and you've got the ocean here, the Outer Banks, and the coastal plain, what's called the Piedmont. And you don't see inceptisols in here, but once you get up into the more mountainous areas outside of the Piedmont, you can see the steeper slopes and notice the distrudeps up there. So these would be the low base saturation inceptisols. And the parent material they're showing here is sort of a granite type of composition, or gneiss, which is very similar to granite. It's just a metamorphosed variety of it, but pretty low in terms of the bases there. So that would be one example of the where you might find inceptisols. And the other, we didn't look at this one before, but it's figure 14.2, and it's in the chapter on, I think this might be the one on spodosols, but this is in Pennsylvania, and you've got the haplodults kind of dominating the lower parts of the landscape, and they show the parent material here primarily is colluvium off the mountain slopes. And then all of this is sandstone, which again, a fairly acidic or base poor type of parent material. And so you get all these distrudeps that are forming on the steeper slopes. And then up top here, where it's a little more level and higher elevation, more snow, more annual precip, you get the spodosols present. So these inceptisols, you know, they kind of dominate the landscapes where it tends to be steeper and those types of conditions, but they're usually surrounded by soils of other orders that are forming on the either more stable geomorphic surfaces, or in the case of the spodosols here, probably a little more stable but more snow and conditions that would give rise to podzolization and a spodosol. Okay, so I'm going to stop there. That's it for the inceptisols. And on Tuesday, we're going to finish up with the entisols. And as you can guess, we've gotten to the end of the soil orders by then, so there's not a whole lot to say about them other than they don't fit in these other categories. And in terms of what's going on pedologically in entisols, not a whole lot. Very, very little. Okay, see everybody at 6. 1:30.